Welcome to the Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes, joined by Tim Miller on a day that may be decisive. Sometime today, it is possible that Joe Biden will achieve the 270 electoral votes to make him the 46th president. So I hope that people just tune out the crazy a little bit later. So, hey, good morning, Tim. How are you?
Charlie, good morning. I'm doing pretty good. I was a little down on the Next Level podcast yesterday morning, and I'm feeling up here. So I'm happy to give everybody a little jolt.
Okay, so in terms of, I did say that I want that people should tune out the crazy and the hysterical and ignore the hand wringing and the recounts and the lawsuits and all of that stuff, and just focus on the fundamentals. I personally believe that Pennsylvania is going to put Biden over the top, but there are some interesting things going on out there. So you know, Paula White is the personal spiritual advisor to the president of the United States. You know Paula?
I know of her.
Okay, so Paula thinks this is a done deal. So and Paula has intervened with the real big guy. So let me just give you a little bit of a flavor of this, okay? Just to put us in the mood. This is the personal spiritual advisor to the current president of the United States.
Strike and 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 strike until you have victory for every enemy that is aligned against you. Let there be that we would strike the ground, for you will give us victory, God. I hear a sound of abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. I hear a sound of shouting and singing. I hear a sound of victory. I hear a sound of an abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. I hear a sound of an abundance of rain. I hear a sound of victory. The Lord says it is done. The Lord says it is done. The Lord says it is done.
Okay, I'm not sure she's referring to the count in Pennsylvania or Arizona or anything, but that's going to be an earworm nephew, Tim, all day.
I was waiting for the hex. I was waiting for the hex on Biden to come on at the end instead of just the up left. Here, you know.
Wait, probably, I cut out the crazy stuff where she actually starts speaking in tongues and everything. So we just left that out.
You got to think that Trump, the best argument against Trump running again in 2024 is, he's just got to be happy. He doesn't have to pretend to listen to these people for a couple of weeks. That's got to be the only positive silver lining for him in his impending humiliation.
Yeah, I don't know that he thinks of it that way. Okay, so, you know, we're talking about the mood here, and we were, before we started this, you know, there are people, of course, who are watching the changing counts in Arizona. We don't know what's going to happen in Nevada. Georgia is genuinely a coin flip. There's no question about it. But I just think everybody needs to take a deep breath here, and because a lot of things that are happening were predicted. Everybody said, okay, now Pennsylvania is going to be this way. It's going to start off with a huge Trump margin, and then they're going to count the mail-in votes, and those are going to be very strongly for Joe Biden. And that's been what's happening. Joe Biden has been hitting his targets in every single county, every single area of Pennsylvania, what he needed to do. The numbers are coming in are like 70% or more of, you know, Biden votes. You just do the arithmetic, and it looks like Joe Biden is on track to win Pennsylvania by 100 to 200,000 votes. And when he overtakes Donald Trump, that's it, guys. I understand that some people just say, no, we need to wait for, no, really, that will be the 270, and Arizona won't matter. Do you disagree with me?
No, that's exactly right. And I mean, it's frustrating. I understand the frustration. I'm getting frustrated. It's frustrating because, and we can talk more about this, this race would be over, would have been over probably 24 hours ago if the Republican state legislators in Pennsylvania and Michigan had allowed for early and absentee votes to be counted before Election Day, like they do in other states, like Florida. Like Florida doesn't have any magic fairy dust that allowed them to be counted on election night. They just had rules in place by my old boss, Jeb Bush, that allows for a quick count that was changed made after 2000. The Democratic legislatures made these changes this year in order to create the Republican legislatures in the upper Midwest made these changes in order to create chaos. And so, this thing should have been over 2 days ago. That's frustrating. But look, Joe Biden is outperforming Hillary Clinton in Luzerne County in Scranton. He's outperforming Hillary Clinton in Bucks County in suburban Philadelphia. He's outperforming Hillary Clinton. He's outperforming Hillary Clinton in all of the major population centers of Pennsylvania. And what is happening is literally the same exact thing that we all just watched happen in Wisconsin and Michigan. So, you know, the writing is on the wall here. And, you know, my chest was tight on Tuesday night waiting for that Milwaukee, you know, I was watching that. I'll still be triggered by this for years to come, watching that police escort from the Milwaukee city to the Milwaukee county at, you know, 4 a.m. Eastern time, whenever it was. But once that number dropped, that told us what we need to know about Detroit and Pittsburgh and Philly. It's the same story across the upper Midwest. Huge margins in the early vote and decisive margins for Joe Biden.
So I was thinking about it this morning that the timeline of the way the votes have been counted have kind of obscured what's going on here. I mean, look, I understand that Democrats underperformed and are very disappointed in Congress. I get that. I understand that it's shocking that millions of Americans voted for the orange guy despite, you know, watching him. I get that. And the Trumpism wasn't repudiated the way that we wanted. But and it's also true that, you know, that Trump's going to be around as a toxic presence. But it is worth at least taking a moment to recognize that Joe Biden is going to be the 46th president, that he is on track to win close to 300 electoral votes, more popular votes than any presidential candidate in history, possibly more than 80 million, and he will have decisively defeated Donald Trump. Donald Trump was fired by the voters a couple of days ago. So I was just reading some of these strange takes. I don't know whether you've seen this. You know, there's a headline in Politico: Trump's losing, but he also won again. Even in loss, Trump's clout and support has somehow grown. Okay. Axios has this line: win or lose, President Trump will emerge more powerful than ever inside the GOP. Okay. Wait. No, really, no. Because you're not going to be more powerful than ever because he won't be president anymore. And Tim, being president is quite powerful. Being a defeated ex-president is less powerful. Being a disgraced ex-president is even worse. So people need to at least understand, you know, what's happened here. And I know that there's all of the, you know, the smoke and the mirrors and all of that. But Donald Trump is suffering a humiliating, very personal and very specific rejection by the American people.
That is absolutely right. And can I just add to that? There are these takes, a lot of these takes out there about how this has exposed the media and the Democrats and the Never Trumpers' lack of understanding of real America and of Trump's America, and they still don't understand this country. And, you know, Brad Todd wrote a column in The Atlantic about how the great Trump majority that we've seen, I think he said this is still Trump's America. You know, and Reason, Wabi Suave wrote about how the media doesn't understand the America and they got fooled again. It's kind of like, well, is that really true? I mean, the polling was wrong, and we can talk about that. The media that I watched was mostly the center-left media in a panic about the exact same thing happening going forward. I know that all of us were, you know, very cautious going forward because we, you know, didn't want to do 2016 redux. I mean, how many times did 2016 PTSD get brought up in columns and TV hits over the past
every
few weeks?
Single time?
Every time. And so in the end, what we're going to see is a somewhere between 6 and 9 million popular vote rout by Joe Biden.
He's going to win nothing.
He's going to win with margins bigger than George W. Bush won in 2000 and 2004, bigger than President Obama won in 2012, bigger than obviously Donald Trump, who got a minority in 2016. So you know, in this century, Obama's 08 victory will end up being the only you know, bigger landslide. Now, I get that it doesn't feel that way because of these counts. It doesn't feel that way because of the Senate. But if you're going to take a big picture take about what this means about the country, you know, that needs to conclude the fact that Joe Biden won a very clear victory throughout the country. He's going to get more votes than any president has ever received in a high turnout election. Now there are some worrying signs too, which we can talk about. But the basic fact is that Joe Biden, won handily, and he's gonna in the popular vote. We're gonna see how the Electoral College shakes out if he ends up sweeping Georgia, Arizona, and Pennsylvania, which is definitely possible. He'll end up with over 300 electoral votes on top of that.
Yeah, in my map, by the way, I had Biden at about 290, and I was considered optimistic. But I mean, it is also worth remembering that not only has Donald Trump been fired, but he's going to be leaving as a failed president. I mean, think about 2020 for Donald Trump. Impeachment, trial for abusing his power, trying to concoct a fake scandal. He bungled a pandemic. We have 9.5 million Americans who are infected. 234,000 dead so far. None of that's going to get better. I mean, his failures and the corruption are going to have a long tail, I think. And I don't think it's going to look better in retrospect. I don't think people are going to look back on this necessarily, nostalgically. And my guess is that he saved the worst for last, that the next 70 some days, it's going to be pure Trump, pardons handed out like Skittles, petulance, anger, grievance. At some point, we should devote a whole show to, will he show up for the inauguration? Spoiler alert, no, he won't show up.
Yeah, we're not going to see graciousness.
No, not.
And I think it's going to reveal, I think that there's a moment here where kind of the institutional GOP feels vindicated. And I know that like deep down in people's hearts that hurts everybody, that they wanted comeuppance for all the enablers and they didn't get that. And I share that view, and I'm going to yoga to try to take deep breaths and not be upset that people didn't get their comeuppance for their behavior the last 4 years. But here's the thing: it is going to also reveal, I think, the divide that remains between the Republican base who will like Trump's behavior in the intervening 70 days. And the Republicans who think that they can wind back the clock. And so, I think that there's more pain ahead for them. I don't know this necessarily means that he'll be back in 2024. We don't have a crystal ball, but the fact that he will be a failed president and that he will, go out like a petulant child, is pretty clear at this point.
I think you mentioned 2024 and as the doom scenario. He can run constitutionally. He can run in 2024. And for people who think that's crazy, and I've said this before, who's going to run against him and beat him in the primary? But let's assume for the moment that he doesn't actually run in 2024. He can freeze the field for a very, very long time. Sometime soon, Mike Pence is going to come in and go, so, Mr. President, I want to gear up here. Would certainly like your blessing. And, Trump is probably going to, drag his feet on all of this, make it very hard for these guys to be able to get any progress. Okay, before we get too far ahead here, because I want to talk about Mitch McConnell and a lot of other things, including you mentioned that there are some warning signs for the Democrats out there, which I think is true. But just for the moment, we're seeing all these protests and the lawsuits and everything. And I have a slightly contrarian take on all of this. You have all the lawsuits that are being out there, and Twitter is exploding with allegations of fraud and theft. But I got to tell you, it kind of feels like they're almost just going through the motions. The lawsuits are completely bogus bullshit. And the fact that you have, I think Rudy is the big tell. The fact that you're putting Rudy out there, this is not James Baker. You would think that the president of the freaking United States would be able to bring, these really high-powered, prestigious lawyers and put them in these key states. The fact that you're trotting out Rudy Giuliani tells me it's about show. In fact, do you see Olivia Nuzzi's tweet? He says, this is great. It is outstanding that the same Republican Party that has waged a highly organized and successful decades-long campaign to install conservative judges at every level has a president whose election legal battle is being led by a senile lunatic who can't remember to zip up his pants. Actually, it's perfectly on brand.
I sometimes need an XYZ, but yeah, I hear that's pretty good. It's one of my friends texted, and I don't like to, indulge in Jeb humor since, I have Jeb on a pedestal, but this was pretty funny. He said that we're looking at a pretty low energy coup here.
Yeah.
Like, he had a lot of months to plan this, and there was a lot of Sturm und Drang about the coup, and the coup has been pretty low energy so far. It's mostly been whiny tweets. And, you know, I think there's reason to be concerned about far right violence, you know, kind of these sort of one-off actors, you know, if you looked at the scene in Maricopa last night, but even these protests, you know, it's like kind of 200 cranks, right? It's not like these overwhelming protests. So I kind of agree with your contrarian take on this. I think it's good to be vigilant, of course, but at this point, I've not been impressed with the output of this attempt to steal the election from the Trump crowd. I also haven't been impressed by the Republicans who just sat silently, with the exception of like Adam Kinzinger and maybe one or two other people, while he's done his low energy election stealing attempt. And also the
protests, it's almost self-parody. So in Michigan,
it's literally parody.
It is literally parody. Stop the count. Stop. And then in Arizona, it's like, count the vote.
It is like there was an episode of Veep of this. Exactly. Like, this literally happened.
It is. I posted this in my newsletter. There's an episode of Veep where they do this. Which is it? You have to make up your mind.
I just revealed that I hadn't read the whole newsletter this morning. Sorry.
No. That's fine.
It's only 7 o'clock a.m. out here. So
that's not a problem. I basically did kind of call it. You know, I understand. You know, but I figured that, you know, if everything goes to hell, the last thing to worry about in the world is whether I was premature in my newsletter. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so you mentioned some worrying things for the Democrats. Let's talk about that for a moment, because I wanted to dwell at least for a moment on the fact that we'd fired Donald Trump and that people ought to wallow in that. At least take a deep breath. But there are some worrying signs.
Just really quick on that point, just one more on the celebratory point. I'm ready. I have the celebration playlist ready. I wasn't ready to play it on Tuesday night because the things we're about to talk about I'm being unhappy on. But now we're about 48 hours in, and I'm ready for the damn vote count to be finished. I'm ready for Dave Wasserman to tweet, I've seen enough.
Yeah.
And I'm ready to turn on the celebration playlist. So I will be sharing that for folks. So if you're having some mixed feelings right now, it's good to take a moment to enjoy the celebration of riding this guy out on the rail.
What's the first one on the playlist?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to give it away.
Okay, don't give it away.
I've got so many good ones. So.
Okay, so back to things to worry about.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Hispanic vote is the obvious one. I think that there's this kind of presumption that because Donald Trump, is such a ham-handed bigot, that meant that every person of color was going to vote against him. I think that was a false assumption by the Democrats, and I think that I don't know that they're in a very good position to understand. It might be overstated to say to understand why it happened, but I think that there are going to be some pressures in the media and in elite circles to push them the wrong direction in trying to get the voters they lost. And let me explain it this way. In my view, just looking at the numbers, it's Cubans, it's conservative Texans, Latinos, low-info voting. Yeah, mm-hmm. Catholic Latinos, and it's low-info voting Latinos. So it's a combination of the same cultural divide you're seeing among white people, right? I mean, it's rural, Latinos who in a cultural, in their kind of cultural milieu is much closer to, their neighbors with like the American flags and the guns and, et cetera. Yeah. And so they're going to like Trump, So when we have this education divide where there's this huge gender gap and this huge college education gap, you shouldn't be surprised when non-college educated men who are black or Latino are drifting towards Republicans. And so you're not going to get them back by doing what the New York Times ed board wants you to do. Talking about Latinos. That's not the path. So, and maybe the answer is that they're not coming back and the Democrats need to recognize their shifting coalition. The other thing that I see is that there's a lot of people on the far left of the coalition who have been saying over the last 2 days, like, this election proves that we didn't need the Lincoln Project and RVAP guys and, you know, because Republicans stuck with the president. It's like, well, no, actually, the growing part of in the shifting politics, right? The Republicans are picking up these non-college educated men of all races, right? The Democrats were picking up college educated urban men and college educated women everywhere, right? And they're picking up college educated men and women in places like the Wild Counties, which I wanted to ask you about. These are not Bernie people. You know what I mean? So if you look at the growing part of the pie in the Democratic Party, the growing part of the pie is kind of us, honestly, for lack of a better word. And the shrinking part of the pie includes these, you know, sort of minority men who don't have a college degree. So, okay, they can try to reverse that if they want, but I'm a little concerned that they're going forward on a path that alienates both.
Yeah, that is a worry. So you asked about the Wild Counties for people who because we're always obsessed here in Wisconsin about, you know, these are the very heavily Republican counties, suburban counties around Milwaukee. I live in one of them. There's Waukesha, Washington, and Ozaukee County. Washington County is still very, very intensely red. Waukesha County was getting a little wobbly, you know, for Trump. But the really interesting thing was Ozaukee County, where I am right now, where I think Trump won by only 8 percentage points, which is really stunning. I mean, this used to be a solidly like 65-35 county. The community right to the north of where I am right now is called Cedarburg. And remember, there was a period where every national reporter in America came to Cedarburg to write about the random Trump voter. I mean, everybody. It was like, it was Politico, ABC, it was Time Magazine. It was like, was it a memo that went out and said, you know, Cedarburg is the heart of America, and it is the heartbeat of America, and everyone must go to the main street of Cedarburg and talk to people. And they found crazy Trump supporters who believed in QAnon and that Hillary Clinton drank the blood of babies and all of that stuff. I think Biden won Cedarburg, which is part of this indication of this shift. Now, there's a flip side of the story in Wisconsin, which is that those Biden Trump counties stayed Trump. Trump actually did better. I am sorry. Yeah, Obama, Trump. They didn't flip back. Not many of them flipped back, if any. In fact,
Gore was the one that flipped.
Yeah. But the big story in Wisconsin, and this is what the left is going to seize on, is this massive vote out of Dane County, which is Madison, the People's Republic of Madison. I mean, they provided more than 180,000 vote margin. Joe Biden's margin in Dane County, one county, was 35,000 votes more than Clinton's margin. And that's liberals, that's progressive. But I think that the Democrats really do need to ask themselves, how did they spend that much money, by the way, in the Senate elections and the House elections and come just up really with quick, nothing?
Just real quick, I want to just marinate on the WOW a little bit, because it's important. In every one of those counties, the margin dropped substantially, right? And there's this good Tim Alberta article, which looks also at Livingston County in Michigan, which is a conservative county. And so, you know, you're there, I'm not, but I this is all explained by probably Paul Ryan and Walker voters, you know, voting for Joe Biden, right? I mean, there's not this immigration into those counties of liberals from other parts of the country, right? And there's not, you know, people who just didn't, maybe there's some people who just didn't vote that came out this time. I don't want to presume, but, you know, if you look at a place like Washington County, which Trump still won, but is traditionally very conservative. And I don't have, I think it's like 29-20 or something, drop from 2016 to now. The only way to explain that is from conservative or, you know, center right people switching, right?
Yeah, I think so. And also around the country, you know, what I'm hearing from Democrats who are running in these congressional races is that a lot of them were running against AOC in effect. That in fact, what the Republicans had succeeded in doing was painting Democrats as far left radicals. And to the extent that they had some success, That was it. So for the Democrats, we're saying now we need to pivot much harder left. We need to become more socialistic. Bring that up with the in the Democratic caucus of the House of Representatives right now, because I'm not sure how that plays. By the way, what was the number between Amy McGrath and Jamie Harrison? Did they like raise like $300 million between them?
Yeah, like a quarter billion.
Just crazy. And
you know, I was always skeptical about this, and this is a long-term problem, you know, that we're going to get to spend a lot of time in 2021, 2022 talking about, but the nature of the way that the Senate is, you know, creates a lot of problems for Democrats. They had to win that Susan Collins seat, you know, like they have such a narrow path now. You know, if you're not going to win red states, and I was skeptical of Iowa, I was skeptical of Montana, Kansas. I guess Alaska's still out, and that's kind of a weird state, so who knows? But I'm pretty skeptical of that. And so if you can't win in these red states, like Manchin is this outlier, you know. And 12, you know, what was it? Like 06, you know, 14 years ago now, Democrats used to put up, you know, people like Sherrod's still there, Manchin's still there, but that's about it. You know, contrarian, you know, Democrats that match their states. You know, all the Mark Pryors and the Heidi Heitkamps, they're all gone, the Claire McCaskills. And so how do you, you know, win those back, right? It's not with justice Democrats, right? The tent needs to expand. I mean, Connor Lamb, thank goodness, won by the skin of his teeth in the Pennsylvania House seat. You'll get a Pennsylvania Senate seat. There's going to be a key one coming up. So, and there was a lot of money wasted in these red states that they're just red. You know, you can't just wish cast South Carolina to becoming blue. You know, Georgia's moving. Maybe South Carolina's behind it by a decade, but it's not there.
So our colleague Bill Kristol just tweeted out a little while ago when we were starting this that he thinks it's very possible, maybe likely, that Biden is the only Democrat who could have beaten Trump. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, we'll never know for sure, but man, if you look at here, like, there are three. If you go back to, I'm just all Tim Elbert all the time right now. Yeah. So I hope I get like a little gift from him in the mail. But he had three key groups in his political analysis of the Upper Midwest why it's going to go to Biden. It was, as mentioned before, these conservative suburbs. Add on that the Reagan Democrats. Is sort of former Democratic blue collar white folks, not in the rurals, but kind of in the urban centers, and then black voters in the cities returned not quite to Obama levels, but closer than Hillary got it. Joe Biden was a great match for all three of those demos that carried them to victory, and I look at the rest of that stage, and some of them were a good match for one of the three. You know, but nobody else was a good match for all three. And so I think that there's this trade that goes on, right? Maybe, you know, the youth vote was down. Maybe, you know, the youth vote goes up a little bit if there's a different candidate, but you lose some people in Washington County, Wisconsin, right? You know, so it's hard to kind of do all the math on this trades, but with the way that the map turned out, there's a strong case that Joe Biden was uniquely suited.
I think so. In fact, this map that we're talking about was the Biden map. This was the rationale for Joe Biden, that Joe Biden would be the one who'd be competitive up in these, you know, big 10 states that are going to decide the election. So I was thinking back on the decisive moment in the entire presidential campaign, you know, the one turning point. And I imagine if we did this as a contest, people would say, well, it's the pandemic or it's the bleach or it was when Donald Trump came down with coronavirus or everything. You know what I really think that it was? I think it was when Jim Clyburn went all in for Joe Biden right before the South Carolina primary. Yep. And you remember this because you had this, you know, famous piece in the Bulwark where you said to Democrats, you have, was it 10 days, 11 days? You have 11 days to save your party. Otherwise, you are totally effed. Right? Remember that?
Yeah, of course I remember. Yeah, and Biden was the only one. There were things that I liked. Obviously, I had a soft spot for Mayor Pete as a gay, you know, sort of technocratic kind of candidate. I had some of the other candidates were fine. But as it stood there on the brink of South Carolina, Biden was the only one. You know, so you were Bloomberg had no chance to put together the right coalition. So Biden was the only one. And so I think you're right on Jim Clyburn. And I think that that's, You know, the other thing, though, I do have to, you know, say on the pandemic, because I think this should be a wake-up call to all of us as well, is, if you look at the numbers, it's hard not to come to the conclusion that had Trump even faked taking it seriously, that he would have been reelected. I think that his recklessness, you know, might have helped juice the base a little bit with this whole, like, lockdown versus open it up fight. So I think he actually did get a little bit of boost out of his recklessness. But you know, if you look at the Republicans who outperformed him, it's hard not to see that as just an indictment of his handling of the virus. You look at, you know, Georgia and North Carolina, he runs behind those Senate candidates only by a point or two. But, I mean, what other conclusion can you come to?
No, I agree with you. I think that maybe sometimes we underestimate the anxiety of voters about the economy. There was this tremendous open it up thing, which I thought was counterproductive, but I think it had some political resonance out there that if your livelihood was dependent on the country not shutting down again, that motivated you. And he played to that. Of course, that may mean hundreds of thousands of people will die, but maybe there was some political upside for him on the economy.
I think that that is certainly the case. I think that, yeah.
Okay, so Mitch McConnell. Let's just talk about this, the failure to win the Senate, because if you're a progressive, that had to be just soul-crushing to see.
I thought we were going to do the happy episode and talk about
it. Well, it depends how it comes. Okay, we happy, happy, happy. But the Joe Biden, you know, I mean, they were hoping that Joe Biden's going to go in there, he's going to have this progressive agenda that we're going to have, you know, the Medicare for all, we're going to have, you know, massive infrastructure, which they still may have, you know, maybe pack the courts, add a couple of states. With Mitch McConnell in charge, what is it going to be like? Is Joe Biden's presidency now crippled from the beginning? Are we just in for gridlock? What are we looking at?
Bill's, I haven't gotten around to listening to the podcast yesterday, but I did read Bill's article on this, and I talked to him about it afterwards. I said, I think that he's slightly pessimistic. It's good to be pessimistic in these times. It's 2020, but I think he was slightly pessimistic in his view that immediately both parties retrenched to their corners. I think that depending on how the Senate shakes out, if it's 51, 52, you know, it's not hard to see the Lisa Murkowskis and the Susan Collins and you know, whoever else making a little gang, you know, with the Joe Manchins and the conservative Democrats and trying to get a few things done on the economic relief for the virus and various other things. And that McConnell will see, you know, at least nodding to that to be something that is politically valuable. I mean, he's nothing if not calculating, right? So I'm not saying I'm predicting that per se, but I think that presuming that the Republican Senate immediately goes into, you know, Dr. No mode on every single agenda item, I think is probably a little dour. For progressives who wanted, you know, the public option and the Green New Deal, like that stuff isn't happening. But what about the more proximate things?
Yeah. What about the appointments? There was some speculation that Mitch McConnell was really going to, you know, use the Senate clout to force Biden to choose more moderates for his cabinet. Do you see that happening?
I guess. I mean, so this is something I do think, you know, we can navel gaze on all of the various divides between, you know, in the Never Trump crowd a little bit too much sometimes. But I do think that this result is going to reveal a pretty clear fissure. And there's a fissure between people like me who supported Joe Biden. And I thought that the orange band was bad, but I also thought that Joe Biden was perfectly fine. And, you know, we didn't agree on every single issue, but I thought that he would have handled the presidency just fine with the Democratic Senate and with, you know, some of the conservative Democratic senators, you know, keeping in check the far left. And the Republicans who really just found Donald Trump personally gross, but, you know, didn't see any need to change anything else within the party. Right. I think that crew is thrilled that Mitch McConnell is there to obstruct and ensure that Joe Biden gets, doesn't appoint any bad people to the cabinet or whatever. I would have been. I think that Mitch McConnell should just let Joe Biden point whoever he wants. Like, I don't think that there's any reason to have.
That's not where you want to fight your fight. Yeah, that's not where you want to fight the fight. I mean, if you're going to twist arms, you know, maybe wait on the judges, you know, judicial positions, but Secretary of the Treasury, Secretary of Labor, you know, I'm skeptical that he would do that. You know, I mean, so if Joe Biden comes to him and says, "I want to make Elizabeth Warren Secretary of the Treasury," is the Senate going to block that? Is that where they're going to fight their fight?
But I don't. I mean, Charlie Baker could appoint it. This is what I'm saying. It feels like going back to the old days. Like, remember we had this big fight over, you know, whether Obama could appoint Chuck Hagel to Secretary. And it's just it feels that is not a objection that in a post-Trump era like rises to the level of something worth getting upset about. Like, is Mitch McConnell really going to be able to rile people up because Joe Biden, Secretary of Labor, is a little too pro-union or whatever? I find this hard to believe. I mean, if somebody, you know, again, if there was a different Democrat that was president and they were trying to put somebody in who told he was unqualified or whatever, but that was never a worry with Joe Biden. Joe Biden was going to, you know, it was only in these fever swamps in conservative media where they've fabricated this concern that Joe Biden was going to be a puppet for AOC. He never was. So this whole, like, does Mitch McConnell need to check him? I don't want Mitch McConnell to check him. I thought Joe Biden was fine. So that's going to be an area of disagreement with some of our erstwhile pals.
Well, and you know, for some conservatives, I suppose the good news is that there are now going to be several hundred new fiscal conservatives in Congress, right?
Oh yeah.
Well, suddenly they will wake up in January and suddenly go, "Oh, the deficit, the debt.
Did you see the Ted Cruz interview with John Swan on this point?
Oh,
and yeah. You have to go watch it if you haven't. Just search for it. John Swan does this interview, and Ted Cruz is just so shameless. He's just like, "Yeah, I'll start caring about the debt again if Joe Biden wins." He didn't even try to fabricate or fashion a justification of it anymore. If you don't mind, our producer Jim Swift has just sent me something that I'd like to vamp about before this.
Please,
is over.
Would you?
Our friend Meghan McCain. I would have never seen this on my own because Meghan McCain blocked me on Twitter. But she wrote that everyone at the Federalist fights the culture war every single day on behalf of the forgotten Americans. And my husband and his entire team have been right for years. And last night was the biggest validation of that. And they deserve a victory lap. Again, this is like,
what is she talking about?
Again, Donald Trump is going to get beat handily.
What is she referring to?
She's referring to the fact that there's this narrative out there right now that, like, that because Donald Trump exceeded expectations of the polls or whatever, that is this indictment of everybody in the media who doesn't understand the voters who
lost.
Yeah, he lost. And here's the other thing. It's like the Federalist literally yesterday has an article about how Joe Biden is trying to steal the election. So, you know, I'm sorry, like propaganda, right-wing propaganda and lying to your readers and feeding them conspiracies that make them happy is not, you know, representing the forgotten man. And it was not a validation of this. If anybody got validated last night that we don't like, it was, you know, the, you know, kind of sit on their hands, anti Trumpers. I'm not happy about this either, but like if anybody was vindicated by the result, it was those who were on the not burn it down side of the party. The people that were not vindicated were the people that were pushing the Trumpy, you know, nonsense for the past 4 years. They were rejected.
I'm still on this Meghan McCain thing because that's so complicated. I mean, Ben Dominic and the Federalist are among just the sleaziest part of the fever swamp, just the pure cynicism and Trump fluffery and everything. And Ben Dominic is married to Meghan McCain, who is, you know, obviously, you know, and McCain, you would think that she would be saying the vindications of the McCain family in Arizona and everything. What a complicated relationship, because, you know, she clearly has there's no love lost with Trump. And yet the Federalist has just totally prostituted itself in the most fundamentally dishonest ways to Donald Trump. So how do you hold in your head Donald Trump versus John McCain and then still go along with the sleaze fest of your husband? I don't understand. There are a lot of things I don't understand.
Yeah, you would think that's that right up there. Indy would feel vindicated by the fact that we're on a cusp of an Arizona victory, which was you know, the key for over the past 24 hours. And it might turn out that Pennsylvania ends up being the key, but surely looked for a while like it might have been the bulwark, no pun intended, for Biden.
No pun intended. Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in Arizona. I don't know what's going to happen in Georgia. By the time people hear this, we'll probably have the final results in Georgia. And by the way, the Georgia results are interesting on so many levels because, and this is weird, they have a different system for electing senators than everybody else. So it is possible that you will have two Senate races on the ballot in January at a time when the control of the Senate is still in play, because if you don't get 50% of the vote, you're shoved into a runoff. And right now, Senator Perdue, the incumbent Republican, has been hovering just above 50%, but looks like as the votes were coming in that he might drop slightly below 50%. He's running against John Ossoff. And then you're going to have Kelly Loeffler versus an African-American pastor who's been doing very well. His name is Warnock. Is that right? I should have all this in front of me. So we're going to have another election of tremendous importance in Georgia in January, it looks like.
Yeah, two. I think almost certainly two. Yeah, I mean, at this point, as we're taping this, we're supposed to hear more Georgia numbers soon, but Perdue was just on the cusp of falling under the 50% mark. And to be honest, you know, everybody thought we'd get to take a break after this, but it's going to be a fascinating doubleheader election because Georgia was the big mover. And if you look at, no matter of what happens with the win, Georgia, Trump won by 5 last time. It's going to end up being under 1% either way. So it's a 5-point move towards Biden. You know, neighboring Florida, Trump, you know, is going to end up expanding his lead. So, you know, Georgia is going counter the rest of the country. I think it'll be an interesting test about, you know, how Republicans do without Trump. How can Democrats turn out people for, you know, get the enthusiasm up with Trump off of the out of the picture? Super interesting election. And yeah, the fate of the Senate, I could ride on it, right? So if you're at 52, you could get it down to 50-50. So the Democrats aren't totally out of the woods. I mean, it seems pretty unlikely. Runoffs in Georgia, you know, runoffs in red states obviously tend to benefit, you know, Republicans, right? You know, and so, you know, you would think that the turnout would be higher among traditional older voters and Republican, you know, voters, and maybe less among these newer Democratic voters that were brought in during the Trump era. But I don't, you know, maybe that's wrong. Maybe the enthusiasm on, you know, will be higher there.
It's hard to say. Okay, so I want to revise and extend a couple of remarks on something I said earlier, because I do have this feeling that the Trump folks are kind of going through the motions in terms of the legal challenges, the fact that they, you know, that they have Rudy out there. And apparently they're having a press conference in Philadelphia featuring with like Corey Lewandowski and Pam Bondi, which is like, that just tells you that you don't have your A team. You know, you're the president of the United States and you're still sending out Corey Lewandowski to complain about voting. But having said
that, it's a Jim Baker type figure. It's just not the Secretary of State, Jim Baker. It's Father, it's Father Yod.
Well, of course, that's the analogy from 2000. But having said that, they're going through the motions. You made a point that I don't want to gloss over, which is that doesn't mean that some awful things might not happen, particularly if we do get the Biden declaration of victory. What are the crazies going to do about it? Because, you know, you've seen some of this stuff online. I mean, there's a level of hysteria and conspiracy mongering, and we need to, you know, have Flight 93 elections and do all sorts of things. And governors should appoint electors who will, you know, not go along with the, you know, stolen election, all this crazy stuff. It doesn't take a lot for things to get really nasty. And unfortunately, you know, the Trump, you know, he may be sitting up in the residence, but he'll give oxygen and encouragement to some of the bad actors out there. And this is the kind of thing that can spiral. It can grow. And it can be scary. We're not there right now. It kind of feels farcical. It kind of feels like we're kind of going through the motions. But maybe it's. But I don't want to leave this conversation by saying it's not something we should be really, really concerned about. And I do think that there's going to be a test very shortly for other Republicans. this should be an easy off-ramp from Trumpism for people to say, let's respect the election results. Let's not spread conspiracy theories. Let's behave in a responsible way. So far, I'm not seeing this. I'm seeing people, you know, doing what they normally do. But this would be an important moment for Republicans to say, hey, this is the beauty of democracy. This is why we have peaceful transfers of power. Everybody needs to go along with this. That would be immensely refreshing. But, you know, based on history, I'm expecting to be disappointed.
1,000%. And while we're extending, I mentioned this as an aside when we first brought it up, but I do think it's very reasonable to be concerned about far-right violence.
Yeah.
And I don't think organized, you know, but one-offs, or little groups, you know, with the Boogaloo Boys and stuff.
That's what I'm thinking about. Yeah.
There is going to be, if you look at the information ecosystem, obviously I try to engage in as little of this as possible, but like, you know, this is this guy, Steven Crowder, who has this massive YouTube following and, you know, he spent his entire show yesterday just spreading lies about and conspiracies about the Sharpies in Arizona and like the 120% vote came in a certain precinct in Wisconsin. It was everything that he said was false. He talked for like 45 minutes, but his listeners, they don't see the fact check on Twitter. You know, they think that this is real. And so if you put yourself in the space of somebody who is a little unstable, who's being fed conspiracies by the media, it's not hard to imagine, you know, somebody lashing out in a violent way. So I totally think that that's something to be worried about. It's just that the organized actions from Trump have been much less malicious. Well, malicious, they're still malicious. They've been organized and much more farcical than I think some people thought.
Well, and he can send out the bat signal, you know. Well, I mean, talk about this misinformation. You even have people like, you know, Kimberly Strassel from the Wall Street Journal just peddling complete bullshit about the numbers in Wisconsin. I mean, it's embarrassing stuff. Well, how could you have a vote total this high? Well, because we have same-day registration. I mean, anybody from Wisconsin knows this stuff, and yet it gets peddled. So here's a weird anecdote, how bizarre the world is we live in. My daughter lives in France with my grandson. They called this morning. And she's going, hey, so what's happening? What's going on? We're a little worried about Arizona. And I'm getting questions about the vote count in Wisconsin. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, somebody in France is worried about this misinformation there. But
I was thinking about this. I said, it's funny you said that. I was thinking about this, you know, because it's hard to know who reliable sources are these days.
I know. That's what it is. On the internet.
And I remember watching the Brexit vote. You know, and like, I don't have, you know, I don't read political news in Britain, you know, that closely. Like, I wouldn't know who the bulwark of Britain is,
right,
you know, to get the correct information from. And so I do imagine if you're watching us from a foreign country, which a lot of folks are, obviously there's a lot of interest in what's happening here. You know, you are seeing this just sea of information out there where the CNNs of the world don't want to go out too far over their skis on where things are at. And then you're seeing the Ben Shapiros spreading BS. And then you're seeing the liberals are bedwetting. And it's very, I think, probably
but
true
that
a lot
of
people are getting a wrong picture of what's actually happening.
Yeah, but it's not just foreign countries. It's us.
Yeah,
if you're hanging on Twitter and if you're just the average person, you go, who am I supposed to believe here? Who's credible? Who's not credible?
Right.
And I think the philosophy is right now you just throw the shit up out there. I mean, you have Matt Schlapp out there with the magic Sharpie conspiracy theory in Arizona. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you would have had on, you know, risingeagle.com Facebook page, you know, 5 minutes ago. And now you have, you know, major conservative figures who are going, well, who knows? Maybe we did have magic Sharpies that have eliminated, you know, that write in invisible ink or whatever the hell that particular conspiracy theory is. I mean, really, you know? So,
yeah, I mean, and it's why it's rampant. It's rampant.
Okay. Okay, so while we were talking, we had the Georgia Secretary of State came out with an update. They're probably going to have their numbers by the middle of the day, but here's my favorite part of this. The Georgia Secretary of State says that some counties have forgotten to click the upload button. So they've sent a reminder out.
Yeah. While we're on this, on our Veep too, this is another one that just came in. Allegheny County, Pennsylvania has 35,000 uncounted mail-in ballots, but election staff is taking today off for administrative work and will not resume count till Friday. So, you know, we're just kind of taking it easy on Thursday in the Allegheny County office, putting our feet up, no big deal, taking a long lunch. Got to catch up on our TPS reports. We'll get back to this when we get the chance. No biggie.
Well, it was also Nevada last night. The Clark County, which, you know, it's obviously that's the heart of the entire state. And they were doing a broadcast on MSNBC, and they closed down like about 8 o'clock at night because they wanted to go home, you know, get because nobody stays up late in Las Vegas. I mean, this is a city that is built on 24/7, right? And the election people go, yeah, that's a night. I mean, the fate of the free world is hanging in the balance, but we got to go.
It's Taco Tuesday. You know, I got to get home.
Well, it is never Taco Tuesday at the Bulwark. We are doing this 24/7. So, all right. My advice to people is, and I know nobody will follow it. If you're listening to this, you're obviously not going to stay off Twitter, right? But this is one of those moments where it's more likely to make you crazy. I'm not even looking at our internal Slack messages anymore, because there are certain people there who are a little stressed, not naming any names. You know what I'm saying? I'm not going there. It's just that, you know, things are tense when the prudent thing to do is just mute Slack, your own Slack account. Never mind.
Hopefully okay. We get this thing announced today, but we're going to know by tomorrow regardless.
Well, I was kind of counting on today, but this Allegheny County thing is like, oh, geez. So Pittsburgh help me here. Philadelphia is intensely Democratic. Pittsburgh is, I'm assuming, Democratic as well?
Quite Democratic, yeah.
Okay, so that's another indication that we have a lot of outstanding votes that are going to be very, very good for Joe Biden. So,
yeah, I mean, most of the Pennsylvania outstanding votes are going to be good for Joe Biden. And that's the whole point. And this is the same thing that we went through. It's all in urban centers and mail. I mean, not 100%, but the vast, vast majority.
So why are they taking the day off again? What the hell?
Administrative work.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Are the Steelers on Thursday night football tonight? Maybe that's the deal. I don't know.
They're going to be sitting around with some consultant with a whiteboard, aren't they?
Yeah, they got to file their hours, you know. Let's see now. Thursday night football is the Packers tonight, so it's not the Steelers. But you'll be, you know, being able to watch the Packers and 49ers and hopefully we'll have an announcement by then.
We need to do an inventory of staplers. Who took my stapler from my desk? Should the governor of Pennsylvania, don't you get on the phone and say, guys, just you got to do this. You're on the clock. I'll pay you overtime. Just get it done.
All right. That's another tweet over here, by the way. North Carolina is also not 100% for Trump. It looks like it. But my friend Adisu, who is Cory Booker's campaign manager, said, shout out to the comms team in North Carolina. Because while everybody's mad at Nevada and Allegheny County, nobody's heard a peep from the cats in North Carolina who haven't counted a single vote in 2 days. we don't have our best on this, Charlie.
We don't. All right, Tim Miller, thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate it very, very much.
All right.
And thank you for listening to today's Bulwark Podcast. I'm Charlie Sykes. We will be back tomorrow, and hopefully we will know a lot more than we know right now. Thanks for listening.